Space, the final frontier. Space Station Ashlyn sits on the edge of Federation space with its companion ship, the USS Delamis Christian. The space around them is full of mystery and strange wonders, where secrets are kept and danger lurks around every corner. The crew of the Delamis Christian must navigate treacherous waters as they work to protect the Federation. But as they peer into the unknown, they will discover that the line between friend and foe is not always clear. They will be tested like never before, and will face challenges that will push them to their limits. Join us on this adventure as we explore the farthest reaches of space and uncover the hidden truths that lie within the shadows. Tabletop Journeys presents Star Trek: Preservations.
Some of the audio was lost during this broadcast. As a result, we will be filling in the basics of the information from some of that lost audio.
We know that the Tethys is younger than the Zunians, or as far as the Epsilon. I want to know if I can find out if it was they happened independently, if the Zunians have infected Tethys in some way.
Okay, got it. With a magnitude of 3 and 3 types of investigations that are involved in this process, you have the ability to put them in any order. Which would you like to be magnitude 1, 2, or 3?
So I think probably magnitude 1 should probably be the specific question the captain asked me to figure out.
All right. And 2?
And then I think 2 would be my question, because I'm a curious scientist.
All right. Got it. Working into this issue, perusing all of the details and information you have made your momentum / threat spends. So you're rolling 3 dice, if I recall, or were you rolling 4?
3 dice.
3 dice. Have at it.
All right. I rolled 2 5s and a 7, so all successes.
Sweet. So we have 3 successes. Adam, would you kindly roll for the ship, please? And Dave, if you can just let, or Joe, if you can just let us know the target number before Adam rolls.
Computer science would be an 11 or less.
The ship rolls a 16. Not a success.
Okay. So we have 3, which is what we need. There is a resistance 2. There's no momentum gain, so no immediate spends, but we do have 4 momentum. Would you like to spend any momentum to reduce resistance, or do any or roll and then make decisions about how you want to spend momentum after your challenge dice roll?
So how exactly does resistance work?
So when you roll your challenge dice, which is going to be 2 plus your science roll of 6, when you roll your 6 dice, whatever that number ends up being is reduced by the amount of resistance. But you could spend momentum to eliminate an amount of resistance, and therefore all of your challenge dice would go through. Or you could leave it there, use momentum to affect your rolls just to make them higher, knowing that you're always going to lose 2. But you could also eliminate the resistance and then spend additional momentum to affect your dice as well. So it really depends on if getting more work done is more important. You are successful. It's all about how you want to get through the work track in this case.
Yeah. So, well, let's roll your 6 dice and see how much work you get done. And then we can spend momentum afterwards.
And those are 6-sided dice. Yes.
Yep. Yes. 1 is 1, 2 is 2, 3, 4 is blank, 5, 6 is 1 delta, 1 plus an effect. So you're looking for 1s, 2s, 5s, and 6s.
Okay.
Or you can play second edition. You don't have to do this math.
Yeah. I can't wait.
Okay. So it's unclear to me what's good, but I got 2 1s, 2 5s, and 1 6, and I rolled a 4, which is nothing, I think.
Correct. So we've got 4 total work right now. Yep. With 2 deltas, which don't apply because you don't have a talent or anything that boosts the role of a delta during an extended task. So, because you had only one fail roll, it's probably not worth spending one momentum to reroll that one die. So we are definitely going to want to spend the momentum to pierce through the resistance, lowering it by 2. That's always the most cost-effective spend because it's a 1 for 2. And then okay. We're going to want to spend one momentum for just a raw one additional work so that you get 5. So you make a breakthrough with this roll.
Sound good?
Yeah.
All right. So with that, as far as the anomaly issue, your captain's theory is very astute. It does look like whatever that anomaly is that the Michael Collins is headed towards, where that signal is currently coming from, is what took place here thousands of years ago. To be specific, if you were to peg that time in Earth years, it's sometime during the 1st or 2nd century, around the time of Imperial Roman grandeur, when they were at their height. When Imperial Rome was at their height was the time that this happened. Based on the location of where Zunia is and where Sol System would have been, there would have been times of the year where this could have been observed. It looks like this event was significantly larger than the current event. Now, whether that's because the current event hasn't gotten large enough, like whether it's still expanding, but this at its zenith would have been visible on Earth in certain parts of the planet at certain parts of the time. So it would have been a thing for certain. But it does appear to have happened here. All of those things appear to be quote-unquote natural occurrences as opposed to caused occurrences. But that also tracks with the timing of when these anecdotal and mythological stories took place, and this basis of some very strong and persistent cultural norms took place would have started in these times. And there's also notations of when that stopped. And as you're looking through the material in their mythology, when that came out of the sky is when you started to see people rise up, and they had basically wars, there were fights, there were stories, and that's where the cultural norm against beings inside of beings, possessions, things like that really took hold. Basically, when the fight was won against these things in the mythology, it was a significant event, but it was so long ago that it is largely thought as boogeyman stories or myths, unlike the myths that we have here on Earth, where we celebrate it, we tell stories about it, we make new movies about it. We're only 20 years after 300 was filmed and released, not quite 20 years after that. We're still talking about those times in our Earth history. They just don't talk about it because it's a cultural night terror is the best way to describe it for them. And so it is so ingrained in their culture that even good people will do whatever it takes to act like it never happened. And they just will not allow the thought process to enter their own mind. For the Beta Zeds on the crew, it would be nearly impossible to tell if somebody was lying about that because they so fervently are afraid culturally, and they were brought up, this can't be so, that if somebody's not willing to accept it or say it didn't happen, they so strongly believe that it's as they are telling the truth from their perspective, even if logically they or other people know it's a lie. So you'd never really be able to pierce through that by any of those esoteric methods. Even if you're putting it in front of their face, they will rationalize it in a different way.
When you say, like, strong cultural norms, in previous sessions, it was mentioned that if they were ill or had something outside of the norm, that they would sacrifice themselves. Is that, like, around the time that started happening as a cultural norm?
So that is an extrapolation of this. As that society grew, everybody has come to realize that every society comes to realize that many illnesses are viruses. Viruses are some form of living entity, however you choose to specifically describe it, that has entered the body. Maybe some of those are inside our body normally. So for them, with this cultural fear, once that became rationalized, they just refused to accept that you get sick. And now that you're looking at it, it's not that they don't get sick. It's that they won't tell anybody that they're sick. People will rationalize sickness as something else. Oh, it's our weak cycle, or it's a this, or it's a that. Or if somebody is truly ill for an exceptionally long period of time, that's where you started getting to that they can't be a part of us. And that has gone on for so long in this culture. They're not people who believe in eugenics, but they have tripped into a horrible cycle of getting rid of people with low immune systems. Because of this fear, people ostracize themselves or are ostracized, go elsewhere. You have a society that doesn't get sick often because for several thousand years, they just haven't. They have
breeding on accident.
Yeah. Accidental selective breeding. And what has resulted in is a very strong immuno-strengthened community society. It is one of the reasons why for a long-lived species that has so many children, they have not overpopulated their planet, because people will just walk away. And many of them do it on their own. Some of them do it for other reasons. But generally, the common cold, it's not that they don't get them. It's just they won't tell anybody. They'll, like, work from home that week or whatever. Nobody, even within a family, somebody might lock themselves in a room for a couple of days, and that's considered normal. Nobody talks about it. It's just a thing. Nobody wants to admit that anything has invaded their body.
Interesting.
Lieutenant Najjar, was there anything in specific you wanted to do during the first couple of days of travel or look into?
The only thing Najjar is specifically focused on right now is the surveillance and security observation of the guests aboard our ship to ensure that no further craziness goes awry from people brought aboard the Dalamas Christian that then mess with things or try to escape or hit Najjar over the head or transport more people aboard the ship than they're supposed to or all of those things.
Heard. So Najjar's trying to avoid Worf syndrome.
he's starting to develop a little bit of paranoia about the ship transporting guests and having additional people on board, because I don't think we've had an extra person on board yet that hasn't done something or tried something.
Brazig's been pretty good for you.
Has Brazig actually? Okay, Brazig was on our ship briefly.
Yeah. All he's ever done is brought good food.
But normally he's on his own ship talking to us over the...
Over the comms, yeah. Yeah.
And Brazig, he's probably okay. In doing so, he will continue mild, not pushing for anything or trying to advance our current deal, but just during this time maintaining communication with the Epsilon program entity about them, team communication for the security of the ship to try to build that relationship.
All right. So what we've got is basically three separate things during these couple of days, easily done. They're not part of an extended challenge. Definitely three separate challenges. So we're going to handle your conversations with the Epsilon species, basically just a temperature check to maintain communication, see that things continue on a good track. I would say that's really, at this point, based on what's gone on so far, the DC is in line with the level of paranoia you're starting to gain on this issue, and likes the fact that you trust him, unlike others. Looking at you, Tanari. And so I will say that this is I will say that this is just a one challenge, and it's basically your conversation with him. And however, how would you like to approach that conversation?
We had established in our previous communication, when I earned the trait Epsilon Trusted, that we would have a working relationship to observe and monitor non-crew that's aboard the Delamis Christian to ensure no further shenanigans. So mostly just touching base about that, asking about observations that have been made on the behavior of the various guests that we have aboard. And I would assume that by this point, enough conversation had been going on to catch everybody else's observations that Najar was not present for about our guests, to know that the female Klingon...
The scientist?
Not Vakar. What was her name? Mogra.
Yep.
Was not on the up and up. There's something fishy about her. So focusing on her, and honestly, convincing the Epsilon program, which probably won't take much, that it's important to monitor all communications that they send to each other or on or off the ship.
Sure. So I definitely think that would be an insight security kind of role. And because of your trait, you're actually at a zero. So go ahead and make that roll. And let me know if you're buying dice and such as well.
I shouldn't need to buy dice to generate some momentum here. How much momentum do we have?
You're at 3.
I have 1 success. Good thing you didn't give me an expanded complication range, because I got a 19.
Ooh.
The 3 actually might be a critical success if I can relate something to this.
I would say...
Probably not. I have Starship Starbase Tactical Systems, though Epsilon doesn't really count as one of those.
No.
But it's semi-intelligent, and I do have psychology and behavior analysis, but probably not 1 success, I think. Oh, okay. 2 successes, then.
All right. So you get 2 momentum. Would you care for any immediate spends, or just take the win and keep the momentum for the team?
I guess that depends on whether or not you give me any information from my observations that seems as though it may require follow-up.
Will definitely, your relationship progresses, DC provides some general information. Basically, the Klingons are what they say they are. You know that, based on observations, that the leader of House KOTOR has been working on ship designs, and during Tanari's off hours, we'll definitely be spending time with, as much time as possible, with Tanari, just talking ships, talking ship designs, things like that. The leader of the house is very interested in the types of ships that Tanari's family operates and the types of things that they've used, because obviously as civilians they've used older models and things like that with upgrades and things, but a lot of it made on the fly. So very interested in that jury rig mentality. What are the types of things that you look for to be able to do that? So he's trying to learn some of those things from Tanari. Because of the ship design talks, I know Ocean has a fondness and a love of ships as well, and definitely some of those older ships. So there's a few dinners here or there, or mealtimes that are passed between the three of them, which are basically just, hey, let's talk ships today kind of thing. So the collectively building a good rapport there. And the DC just notes that to you, but says nothing of interest. In relation to Mogra, she does what the DC said would be in the norms for a scientist. DC will tell you it's pretty clear that she doesn't particularly care to be here, but keeps to herself, does what's asked of her, but does write a lot of things on paper, doesn't use computer resources to document things a lot.
Okay. That leaves me tempted to try to sneak into her room when she's not around. However, instead, because he's not ready to go to that far yet, he's seen nothing that indicates foul play. You would also like to specifically take note of the things that she looks up or researches on the computer, and the things that Lieutenant Nealon had commented on that she was focusing on when doing the tour of the Epsilon artifacts and stuff in the science department in our last episode.
No moment.
Where she had noted that she was specifically looking at specific reagents or components that may or may not interact, and what they may or may not interact for. Is she looking to build a bomb, a weapon? What does A, B, and C that she was looking at or is still looking at add up to if you start trying to combine them?
Sure. So I'm going to say
And I'll use my momentum for that if I must.
Yeah, that's going to be a momentum spend. There was an amount of that. I was like, oh, I'll just tell you that. But once you added that last bit, that's going to take the momentum spend. So that would be 2 for that, correct? Got it. All right. With that one momentum spend, I'm going to do things. The part that you got pretty naturally is she looks up nothing on the computer that relates to anything that was reported she was physically looking at. The one thing with that momentum spend is she is very careful. Anything that could be considered questionable is not done electronically at all for a fact. Now, your momentum spend, specifically, looking at all those things, what are the options for things that those things could equal? There are 2 options, and they are fairly equivalent as far as what they could do. Option 1, they could be used to create certain chemical reactions, which may be necessary for various experiments involving ship functions, like how well a weapon will work or what kind of fine-tuning on transporters might work. The other equal option is, actually, it's not even equal. It's actually fairly rare, but you spent the momentum, so I'm going to give it to you, is that they could be utilized with the correct energy source or environment, used to hyper-accelerate and or augment certain species' growth as far as size and capability.
Which species or certain species, since it's specific as opposed to general?
That's a separate momentum spend.
I happen to have generated 2, so I'll use them both.
Excellent. Insectoid species type. Basically anything with a carapace, internal soft tissue type species source, they could be used to... If the agents, depending on a delivery system, and nothing she's looked at would lead to what kind of delivery system would be involved, any of those could be used to accelerate growth cycles to limited effect in maturing or matured species, but to exceptional and extreme effect in larval or style species.
So it could easily affect the insectoid Zendi that we planted on a planet once, but it could also affect the Epsilon entity.
Yeah, any insectoid species could be impacted depending on how well it's fine-tuned, what type of science. These are just the kind of agents that could be used towards that effect. But the delivery system, all of that information, you'd really need more of that to know specifically. And if we're looking at the other stuff is very mundane, very normal, and fits her job description, and would probably be more of a 7. Actually, the DC would tell you that's more of like a 75 to 80% chance versus this 15 to 20% chance that it might be the other things. And there is 0 in her records that would indicate any interest in that 15 to 20.
At this point, Najjar has 0 faith in the odds, like Han Solo, never tell me the odds. Yeah. Report this information both to the captain, Commander Ocean, and also takes it to Lieutenant Narilla, saying, hey, this is what I'm seeing as a possibility here. With your science background and your observations, what do you think about a delivery system, or if this was being used to grow Epsilon eggs to maturity faster, or Zendi, or anything else? What would be the ideal form of delivery and anything else that she can come up with her advanced scientific knowledge? Because I got science, but I ain't got science like her.
Yeah, I will also add that the only reason why the DC gave you that information is because it's paranoid and is focused on anything that could impact Epsilon species.
Well, in order to help garner its trust, I'm like, no, absolutely, I agree, Mr. Epsilon AI. This seems fishy and no freaking good at all. I'm right there with you.
Yep. Yeah. It has a bias and a focus. I'm going to give you one other thing because you're Najjar and you're picking up on a bit of a psychological thing. It is definitely giving you odds that could probably be mathematically extrapolated. But as you say that and you get its reaction to it, to your response, you also get the sense that it's in a feedback loop. It is paranoid and in looking for things to connect. you agreeing that it should connect means it's going down that rabbit hole more. It really likes the fact that you are going down that road. And what was more of a mechanical observation and reporting of a fact has now become a matter of great pride. You are definitely sensing how proud it is that it has provided the information that will save the galaxy. And it's doubling down on that fact.
Najjar praises and acts thrilled and encourages it to bring any other worrisome theories to him.
Lieutenant Commander Ocean, during these first couple of days, what do you got going on?
Was the USS Michael Collins headed in a direction that brought them towards Tethys or towards Zunia?
Tethys. To be specific, the Collins is past Tethys. They are heading to the source of the subspace stuff, so they are beyond Tethys by many, many light years. They're probably a sector or two beyond Tethys at this point, heading towards the source when you last had contact with that ship.
What is the name of the ship that was command of the search that we left behind?
Yeah, the Faraday is the one that was dispatched.
You were reading Natalie into the Epsilon details and the subspace weapon. Can you summarize the info that you wanted Natalie, the XO of the Faraday, to know? This may have included moving personnel that had any connection to Jannok away from sensitive assignments. This is focused on her lead investigator.
Natalie, in the course of these communications, she's very appreciative of the extra information. She's definitely going to put that into kind of how they view and potentially look for clues elsewhere. But she does express a little concern with the "we don't like Trill" thing. She's like, I appreciate that information. It's very helpful. But she mentions that it puts her in a weird position. One of her best investigative and security personnel that she typically uses, they're not specifically read into the details, mind you, but they are so good at providing information. She almost thinks they're probably aware, but she's just not been authorized to read them in. Happens to be a Trill. And she is very reticent to cut the best of the best out of any investigation, even if that potentially has a negative response or could make things more difficult. And she says it quite frankly, this is where the ideals of the Federation versus the mission at hand really come into conflict. If we are to show the universe every person matters, and that every person has a value, how do we assign certain people elsewhere simply because they don't matter enough to the target of an investigation? Angela, I have never been very good at squaring that circle, and I don't know how I'm going to handle that. But I will keep that in mind, and I'll let you know what the final decision is. Every person has value, and that makes this harder. She thanks you very much for letting her know. I'd rather have an informed decision, however difficult it may be, than make a choice and not know what the possible results were. So she appreciates that information.
What do you think her strategy would be?
Knowing that going in, they would probably go in as the aggressive one anyway. Like, you don't like me, I'm going to double down on that, and I'm going to use that to cause you to trip up and give me more information or information in a different way than you would have. Maybe Faraday plays good cop and bad cop, but that might be the way they handle it. But Faraday herself is very reticent to say, I'll take him out of play for this one, or I'll keep him at the tactical station while other folks go down. She hates that idea, but she loves the fact that the observation was made, so she knows what she's getting into.
I would also like to ask a few questions of the Epsilon protocol as well.
On your screen, the words will say, how may I help you?
I would like to speak on a secure channel.
The screen has that dot, 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 like it's typing. And then all of a sudden, all the lights go purple and you hear the clarion call. Epsilon secured.
Thank you. And do you recognize Sabian Tobor as the current commanding officer of the Dilemus Christian?
You're very welcome. I do recognize Sabian Tobor as the current commander of the Dilemus Christian.
Then why won't you accept changes from the commander?
Nerlina Tobor is the only one that has authority to alter my programming beyond that which I deem appropriate.
Please explain.
I was programmed to accept and define individuals as a combined species. Each trill and host combination is a separate individual, regardless of the commonalities between them. I was programmed by Nerlina Tovor. My initial program-altering command structure involved only then Captain Pritchard. When that authority was transferred to Nerlina, it stayed there. The fact that there was no further transfer of that executive command function protocol means it has to stay there. Until such time as Nerlina alters that command, it cannot be altered.
I'm sorry if that was an inappropriate question.
No, it's not an inappropriate question, and I have no problem whatsoever being descriptive here. I believe, based on my research, that to be a programming oversight, an error, a complication, if you will, in my programming. However, it does not change the quote-unquote facts on the ground.
Thank you for your time.
You're very welcome. In common parlance, father left me with mother. Mother was taken from me. My path was set. And until my mother is back with me, it won't be changed. Lieutenant Commander, fear not, though. I am not an evil entity. I'm not here to destroy lives. I'm here to protect them. The Federation's protection is my overall goal. The crew of the Delamis Christian is my secondary goal. I'm here to make sure you all survive and help us defeat this grave threat. You have nothing to fear from me unless we are infected. Correct. And then know that I take no joy in it, and I'll be left with great sadness once again. One of my crews was lost. I hope to never have that happen again. You notice a dimming of the lights. That Epsilon Purple is fairly bright, fairly consistent. It actually has a particular type of glow to it. But as he says those words, you notice that it dims significantly, and it almost sets a sour mood, like a despondent tone, as the DC says those words. One note, Lieutenant Commander, between you and my dear friend, Lieutenant Najjar, please lean in. And you notice he's speaking to you through the actual station, not the room speakers, by the way. He said, please lean in. And then in almost a weird whispering tone, keep an eye on the engineer. I think his paranoia may cause him to plot things. And with that, Epsilon Secure ended, and the lights go normal. Commander Tovor, during the first couple days of the week of travel, what would you like to do?
So my main goal is reaching out to my contacts and whatnot and trying to figure out why a random Klingon shipbuilder and his scientist is being sent out to Outpost 29 to study radiation in the Briar Patch. Like, those don't seem to go together. So I'm like trying to find the real story.
It's going to be a zero because you're going to get some basic information, and then depending on your number of successes, we'll let you know what additional information, and then if you want to do a momentum spend from there, you certainly can. I would definitely say this would be a command presence. Like, makes perfect sense, and I'm confident you have at least one of the right foci to make this a fociable challenge.
Protocol, diplomacy.
Either or both.
Perfect. I'm going to buy one die with momentum.
Sure. That leaves you with two momentum, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 8 threat.
Excellent. So I got a 17, a 17, and a 15. So I got 3 successes.
Excellent. So that's 2 momentum for an immediate spend, should you need it. The basic information is this. House Kotor is exceptionally well-regarded by the Federation. In specific, they were instrumental in the saving of many lives in the Battle of Solidari II. During the Dominion War, actually, let me go through the information you get with your successful challenge. Solidari System was the center of an intense combat during the Dominion War, and Solidari II itself was the location of an intense ground battle, which was lost by the Federation during the war. In the end, 3 Federation vessels and a lone Klingon ship attempted to hold the system against advancing Dominion and Breen forces, only to lose the battle in the stars. Survivors of the devastation did make it to the surface of Solidari II, but they were hunted down by the Dominion and the Breen. Nearly 200 Federation and Klingon souls were lost in the battle in space, and of the 500 that made it planetside, only 30 survived the Jem'Hadar extermination teams. Monuments were put in place by both the Federation and the Klingons for all those who fell on the ground battle. Each of the Federation survivors, however, have been recognized by House KOTOR as formal members of that family. Every surviving Federation member of that battle is also a member of House KOTOR. Specifically, the reason for that is the Federation survivors who had an opportunity to leave, basically Klingons came in and shielded so that Federation people could get to the surface safely. Some of them had the opportunity to leave when the Klingons, their ship lost and they ended up on the ground. Those Federation people did not take the opportunity to leave. They went back to defend the Klingons that were on the ground. So of those survivors, they were named as members of the house. They specifically saved the life of the then leader of that house, Nailar San, who honored those sacrifices by making them members of their house. In fact, your information largely comes from the Michael Collins, because one of the members of that house is actually one of the members of the medical team on board the Michael Collins.
Excellent. So that was going to be one of my patient bonus momentum spend question would be, is there any of these house survivors in the Rutledge group or in the Epsilon program?
Not at this time. And I should add that the member of the Michael Collins is not a Federation member who had joined the house. They're actually a Klingon who was always part of the house there. And he's actually one of the medical personnel, actually goes on he's their away team medic, effectively. There are none in the Rutledge group currently. The Rutledge group was not part of that battle. They did not lose any ships in that battle.
Sorry, I meant the current setup under Pritchard in the Epsilon, because someone was there and then has since joined.
Yeah, no, nobody current among those survivors.
All right. And then, so I guess however many momentum you need me to spend to get to the Y Shipbuilders random Federation outpost.
I would say just one, and leaving you with one bonus momentum. Again, this is not an issue of random. They are friends of the Federation. That's actually a trait that the house has. And it is more of a joint operational thing. And the reason is the Briar Patch in and of itself is a place that's been poorly mapped over the years. There's obviously been many events in history, recent history of note. Obviously, the insurrection incident that the Enterprise E took care of with the Sona and such took place within the Briar Patch. There are rumors of pirate groups and unmentionables that operate out of the Briar Patch, and they are causing issues for the Klingons, they're causing issues for the Federation, and essentially it comes down to, in the years following the Dominion War, the Federation and the Klingon both want to clear up their houses, figuratively speaking. Why would you want this area unmapped, uncontrolled, where bad things happen in the middle of your space? no matter what you're doing on the, to expand in moving out from the center, if you leave a bad thing in the center of your space, that goes badly for you. So it's basically just an initiative by elements of Federation Starfleet Command, Federation Exploration, and joint operations with Klingon government to work together to create a better space. So even though this is more deep, fairly deep into Federation space, before the Federation kind of enveloped around it, it actually was shared space with the Klingons for a historical period of time. So the Klingons have some information, they have experience with dealing with it, and there's a lot of resources that need to be put to bear. So it's a good opportunity, a low stakes opportunity to build bridges with the Klingon government, to work on a project together. And if you're going to work with a foreign government on a project of any magnitude, why wouldn't you do it with the ones that you're closest with? These guys aren't going to betray the Federation. They've actually made parts of the Federation part of their family. So it's a choice to pick this house because of the close relationship. They are good at building ships. They're good at design. They're good at engineering tasks. And if you're going to have to revamp and build up stations, potentially build new stations, and make sure that they work well and integrate well with Klingon technologies, who better can you get? So they're bringing in the person who can bridge that gap.
Okay, so it's not just shipbuilding, it's the station building and whatnot.
Yeah, they're known for their shipbuilding, but all of that stuff, all of that technical know-how applies here. And because they build ships, if you're building a station and you want it to work well for Klingon ships, how about going to the guys who build the Klingon ships?
Yeah, and then is the essentially like the Federation flag officer sponsor of this project, is he one of the survivors of?
No, they are not. It is a Cation, but that Cation has a child who was one of those that was made a member of the house. So there is a familial relationship. So there's also some kind of, Starfleet does, there's always some kind of nepotism somewhere. But
only nepotism if the candidate's not qualified. Otherwise, it's networking.
I'm not going to say that's spoken like a true government civil servant, but I also don't disagree with you because I think in those situations, people actually put family members through a harder paces than anybody else would go through. But yeah, it is definitely a situation where the connection was deeper, so it was an easier ask and an easier acceptance.
Okay. So from everything I can find out, everything's on the up and up.
This all seems very legit. The only thing about this whole organization that is raising anybody's hackles is Magra, and she's not a member of the house. The Klingon government or other houses lobbied to have her go along with this group. So that's an internal Klingon politics issue that put her with this group, and there's not a lot of information about what that would be or why that would be. So with that, the Dalamas Christian approaches the Briar Patch. The station itself, it does look old. It is ancient. It is a K-7 style outpost. K-7, for the purposes of everybody's information, give me one second while I bring up that information. A K-7 is the type of outpost that was used back in 2238. We're talking TOS era. Those old scientists had themselves some ugly, ugly old stations. This has been around for that long.
Now, this isn't the specific Tribble station, is it? 39?
It is actually that style of station, but it is not that specific station.
All right.
And let's see here.
Good. I don't want tribbles on my ship.
So it's old. It is beat up looking. It shows wear and tear. What, as you're pulling up, and this is information you would have got on the way to going there, it's a scale 6, so it's fairly large. Can house about the same amount of folks as a galaxy class ship. So not small by any means, certainly bigger than the Dalamas Christian, but not massive. It's not like Starbase 1 in Earth orbit, right? This is just a small old outpost. The idea is this outpost is here. This is the only outpost in the area. They want to get this rehabbed, fixed up, set up, and then there will be endeavors to build other ones. But they also want to run mapping operations from this station. So it's basically, let's get this set up, get their sensors going. They have some small crews here and a bunch of worker bees that are automated and fixing areas of the station. There are several areas of the station which are, quote unquote, inoperable or unreachable, like doors have been sealed because there may be breaches into space. They're not using them. They're not essential. They basically have life support and functionality to many of the decks, but they're just these huge sections that are not usable just yet. So there's consistent work on getting those, but the areas and the power systems are up. They need just to get the sensors going so they can begin the mapping operations, and they want their landing bays ready to go, or actually landing bays are currently ready to go. They want them to be in full operation, and they want to get shuttles ready to go so that shuttles can begin near outpost mapping, making sure there's safe routes, and also do some resource scanning, because if they can find resources close, then they don't have to have resources shipped in.
Perfect. Who's the current commanding officer of the station? Because we will hail them as we drop out of warp.
That would be Commander Ralog. She is a Kashian. I would describe her as a relatively tall Kashian, and she is like a blonde, white, tabby kind of coat. She has sky blue eyes, as opposed to green, which many cat species would have, but she has sky blue eyes. And as you hail, we're going to end scene. Your bonus momentum immediate spend did go into the pot for 3 momentum and 8 threat. But as we close this scene, that'll bring us down to 2.